Yes, hello.
Blog Talk Radio.
Down there. How are you?
Hang on one moment. Welcome to the Blog Radio Show. I'm Joanne Barton. Mr. John Arricchio is enjoying his Father's Day. Happy Father's Day, everybody. Hope everybody had a lovely day. It's gorgeous over here on the East Coast. Don't know about you, but a beautiful day for Father's Day. Tonight we have a great show. We've got with us the president and CEO of NATAS, NATAS, and it is the National Academy of It's a long one. The National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences. And I'm dying to ask him some amazing questions about what's behind the scenes of the Emmys and everything like that. I never had this opportunity, so I'm looking forward to that. And also, Adam was the head of Twitter back in 2010, and I want to touch base on that too, if he's okay with that. And before we start, let me just say thank you to our sponsors, the Hive Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey, Precious Memory Video, Kintersville, Pennsylvania, KWV Wine, South Africa, Tees for the Times and Other Stuff in Clifton, New Jersey, Syntech Productions in Lenoka Harbor, New Jersey, Oleander Public Relations in Texas, and TakeABreakFromCancer.org, for Pete's sake. We'll talk about that later. Tonight we're going to focus on our sponsors when we're done with the show. So, on the phone with us, I believe we have Mr. Adam Sharp. Sir, are you with us?
Hi, Joanne. How are you?
Hi, how are you? Thank you so much for joining us tonight. I really appreciate it. I'm dying to ask you like a million questions. I hope you're ready.
Of course.
Well, I hope you're having a lovely day. If you're a dad, happy Father's Day, and I hope you enjoyed your day, and definitely appreciate you joining us on Father's Day specifically. And so talk to us. What's going on here? The Emmys, the daytime Emmys, they're coming back to TV. I mean, with everything that's going on, how are we going to do this? How are the Emmys going to be done? Or any award show?
Well, that is true.
The
daytime Emmys are, in fact, coming back this coming Friday, June 26th at 8 o'clock on CBS.
Yeah.
And it marks a return to the network. CBS is the network that has actually carried the daytime Emmys the most in our history. This will be our 47th ceremony, 14th on CBS, so it is a bit of a homecoming there. It's interesting. You know, we'd gone into this year really riding a wave of growth. It was our most competitive daytime Emmys ever. Last year, we set the record for the highest number of entries, and we entered this year breaking it. And because of that, we had expanded the ceremony from what had been two ceremonies the last several years to this year was going to be three nights of ceremonies. Actually, it was supposed to be last weekend in Pasadena. And then, of course, COVID-19 hit. And all of a sudden, the idea of having 2,000 people in a room together became very complicated.
Can I ask you, you guys were already planning the Emmys to come back to TV before the virus hit. I mean, this was already in the works, right? To return?
Yeah, so we've been talking about it since last year, and things had progressed pretty far along in that conversation when COVID hit. Now, obviously, the pandemic put everything on hold for a little bit while we all tried to figure out what this new world looked like.
Sure.
But then I think we came back, and credit where credit's due, CBS really, I think, had the creative, I think, confidence to say, no, we can still do this. And so the show you'll see will be a very intimate show. Our hosts, our presenters, our winners are all going to be coming from home the same way as the fans are watching on their TVs. And I think that'll make for a very intimate show and a much faster moving one. You can do a lot more with the time when you're not waiting for people to walk down the aisle.
Right, right. Now, do you think everybody's going to get dressed up like they normally do? They think they'll go out all out? I mean, obviously, it's still the awards, but we're not being seen in a bigger light, you know, at where we would walk the red carpet, everybody see what you're wearing. I mean, I would think everybody would still get dressed up, right? I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, people were still probably pretty eager to ditch the sweatpants.
Well, they were
going to be staying in the living room. I think certainly it's probably not going to be quite the same level of ball gowns and tuxedos, but I think you will see people rising to the occasion.
Sure.
Certainly one of the big losses is the red carpet. You know, there were a lot of elements of the show which we could transform into this different environment. But that red carpet piece is obviously the most difficult, and hopefully we'll have another opportunity to do that again very soon.
Right, right. How long has it actually been off the air, Adam? I don't recall when it went off. I apologize. You know why? I don't know. It's I'm normally working during the day and don't get to watch TV during the day. So the Emmys to me were not something I would, you know, go out of my way to say, oh, I got to catch the Emmys tonight to make sure that the show that I watch wins. You know, I but now that I'm home, I'm watching TV like crazy, like everybody else. So, you know, now it really does matter to me what wins and what doesn't, you know. So how long has it been off? How long has it actually been off the air?
So the last time we were on one of the, shall we say, big three broadcast networks in prime time was 2013. And since then, we've been on cable and a few other places. But the last few years, we'd actually been on the internet and found quite the audience there. So while it isn't the same spotlight that a network primetime telecast might bring, you know, we were the only major award show to have double-digit year-over-year audience growth the last several years. And I think part of that really stemmed from the fact that so much of the programming we are honoring is now streaming content. That it's one thing when all the shows that are picking up the Emmys are broadcast network shows, but look at our nominations this year. CBS was the most nominated network. Amazon was the second most nominated. So I think a lot of those distinctions of broadcast versus digital have changed. And that was also one of the driving factors of the move to three nights. It was a goal to realign the show so that everyone who was a fan could find the shows they watch on the same platforms where they watch them. So Friday's show on CBS will be honoring programming in most of the categories you're used to seeing on broadcast networks, specifically things like the broadcast daytime dramas, the soap operas, the game shows, the talk shows, and so on. But then in July, we'll have two more digital shows that'll be featuring those categories that have seen explosive growth these last many years, but where the shows and their fan bases are largely online. So Sunday, July 19th, we'll be honoring the best in digital dramas. A lot of these soap operas that are gaining tremendous audiences on Netflix, Amazon, and elsewhere. And on Sunday, July 26th, children's, family, and animation, which is by far the fastest growing segment of daytime. You know, John, when I was a kid, children's television was 3 hours on Saturday morning.
Me too.
And that gave a real limit to
one channel.
Exactly. You'd wake up early, parents are sleeping in, you'd go down and watch Smurfs or whatever. And that put, you know, 3 hours, maybe three channels Saturday morning, that put a real limit on how much children's programming there was out there to be honored in the daytime Emmys.
Right.
But
right.
Now when you have streaming networks, you have dedicated kids platforms, PBS Kids, Noggin, Universal mm-hmm. Kids, Netflix making massive investments in children's programming, Amazon doing the same, Apple Plus rolling out several shows, one of which from the same studio that does Sesame Street, has created just this whole universe now of television programming for kids. And most
right.
of it is being discovered on these online platforms. And so that is still the most appropriate place to have their celebration. And that'll be on July 26th.
Wow. Yeah, I know. It's amazing how if you're not a parent, you don't realize how big the children's market is. I mean, they have their own realm of entertainment. I mean, there's so many choices out there for them to watch. I mean, when I had my kids, I was like, oh, my God, it was just show after show after show. I mean, great shows, too. I mean, nothing you know, to squawk at. I mean, they were really good shows. I mean, the quality of everything and just they've come a long way, especially from our Saturday mornings, you know, definitely. So now what was the reason you guys went to internet and went off of CBS? I always remember it being on CBS, the Emmys, so the daytime Emmys. Was there a reason, specific reason why it went off the mainstream primetime TV?
Well, as they say, it's business. And I think that there was a period of time where daytime television had gone through a big period of change. The number of soap operas that had been the mainstay of soap operas, the mainstay of daytime television had declined considerably.
Yeah.
You saw the cancellation of All My Children, As the World Turns, Passions, all these other soaps that had been mainstays. So now we were down to just four broadcast soaps. And so daytime as it was on at least the major networks, if you were watching on your local TV station, less and less of it was actually coming from the networks. You saw this big
right.
shift towards syndicated programming. So you saw a lot more of the talk shows, game shows, courtroom shows like
yeah.
you know, Judge Judy,
reality.
Judge Mathis, People's Court, and so on, takes on reality. You saw a shift to cable television where you now, mm-hmm. you know, culinary had been a category on daytime for forever, you know, back in the days of Galloping Gourmet and Julia Child,
yeah.
and now there's whole networks intended for it. And so there was this big shift, and the networks themselves weren't as invested anymore. And frankly, the audience for award shows was going down across the board. And that's true of the primetime Emmys, the Oscars, the Grammys, and so on. So that was the initial shift away. I think where we were lucky was the fact that at the same time as that shift was happening, a lot of the audience was moving online. And so we were able to follow that audience, and we were able
You just answered my next question. I was going to ask you, so now that it's gone online, have the numbers increased? And I would guess yes, because everybody is going online. I mean, is that a yes?
Yeah, last year, as a digital show, the only award show to have double-digit year-over-year growth and with a total audience larger than its last year on broadcast television. But, and here's the big but, part of this was the unfortunate forcing into one bucket or another because of the diversity of the daytime, because we have 100 categories honoring all sorts of these different sorts of programming, and that was the real motivator of the expansion to three nights and the recognition that we have a handful of categories that honor programming that is a mainstay of traditional broadcast television. And so that's mm-hmm. probably still the best place to celebrate it and we were very excited that CBS felt the same way. And then there's another block of programming which has been fueled by this shift to streaming, to digital, to the so-called over-the-top, and that creates a whole different place that's the most appropriate to honor that programming. And with 100 categories and no one wanting to sit for a 13-hour award ceremony, just breaking it up into multiple nights makes perfect sense.
Yeah, no, it's a great idea. It's a great idea. I got to ask you, are you a little nervous that something so big could go wrong? I mean, because this is a big, this is a big thing you're doing online, which involves so many people. I mean, you've got all the categories. You've got the nominees that are in it, so you're going to have to show them all at the same time. And there's a lot going on here that people get that normally you would see on TV. Are you concerned? Like, I know you're concerned, but how high is the level of concern that something may go wrong? Or are you just totally confident that everything's going to be fine?
Well, you always want to get it right. And there's also recognition that, part of the stature of the Emmy Award, part of the reason people want it is because of their trust in the Academy, in the competition, in the professionalism of the entire operation. Otherwise, it's just a 13-pound hunk of metal. And so, first and foremost, you don't want to do anything to undermine that confidence. Now, from a production standpoint, this year and the impacts of COVID certainly make a lot of things more complicated. We don't have everyone in one room where we can just bang it out in a couple of hours. But then there's other aspects that get easier, and it gives us an opportunity to be creative. We're doing these 3 daytime shows, but then in August we'll be producing the Sports Emmys. We have the News and Documentary Emmys coming up in September. We've got the Technology and Engineering Emmys in October, all of which we have said are going to be virtual. We're not doing any live in-person events this year due to the pandemic. And so each one of these shows gives us a fresh opportunity to experiment. I don't think any two of them are going to look exactly the same. And so there will be a lot of things that we are not trying in this first broadcast that we will try in later ones, and probably save the bigger risks for later. But I think we have a pretty good show coming together.
Is this year the first woman to receive a Sports Lifetime Achievement Award?
Yes, Leslie Visser, longtime CBS, NFL, sports sideline reporter. She was the first woman credentialed to cover a Super Bowl, first woman to cover courtside at NCAA March Madness, first woman to ever present the Lombardi Trophy at the end of the Super Bowl. So a tremendous career and a real icon to generations of sports sideline reporters that have followed her. On the technology and engineering side, if I count up another first woman to receive a Lifetime Achievement Emmy for technology and engineering after a long career on the tech side of the cable industry. We've not yet announced this year's daytime and news and documentary winners. We're going to be doing all the lifetime achievements at the end of the year. But last year's winners also had a handful of first: Judge Judy and Chef Jacques Pepin at the Daytime Emmys, the first culinary and first courtroom show hosts honored. And then at the News Emmys last year, we honored Andrea Mitchell from NBC. Again, a real pioneer of the craft.
Right.
And it was a very interesting ceremony because it was the night Speaker Pelosi had announced that the House would pursue impeachment hearings. So to have essentially the entire broadcast news industry and this titan of Washington journalism being honored, there were a lot of congratulations in one hand and iPhones reporting the news in the other. And I think it was an appropriate balance for the night.
Wow. Now, part of my ignorance, I just realized that you guys have been doing this. I will not even realize, but what you just told me tonight, you've been online for a while now. Do you also do the awards online, too, or are we haven't done awards at all?
So we do so sports, news and doc, and tech have been streamed online as well. They've traditionally not been broadcast. In terms of what we do honor, we also honor original video programming, those produced for online. So many of our winners are people who are producing programming that is not designed for traditional television. We actually presented the first Emmy Award at the 2006 Daytime Emmys to YouTube. Now, keeping in mind, YouTube launched in 2005. So in its very first year, our Academy presented a statue to a piece of YouTube programming. In the news Emmys in particular, we've seen a lot of growth from news organizations you've known forever, but not as television organizations. The New York Times, Washington Post, and others who produce great video reporting for their websites and their apps. In sports, you don't see quite as much online content in the live coverage categories. I think the rights fees of the leagues, of the NFL, NBA, and so on, are still a pretty high barrier for new entrants into the mix. But certainly in documentary, short form, and fields of sports programming that do not require buying a $1 billion broadcast rights package, we've seen tremendous growth there as well.
Wow. And by doing the awards online, is it just a straight run or are there commercials like we would see on TV?
Usually there are breaks as you see on TV. We have a little bit more flexibility with them online than we do in the broadcast world. You know, in broadcast television, there are very specific moments that you have to hit because the affiliates are expecting to run those commercials. That's why sometimes you'll be watching a live show and it'll cut the commercial in the middle of someone's sentence. The nice thing online is that there's a little bit more flexibility. You can let someone finish that speech. You can let that segment run a little bit long. We don't have quite the same pressure to play people off stage.
Right. Now, what was the reason behind changing the logo after all these years?
I think there were both some practical and there were some practical ones and some philosophical ones. So, at a practical level, the logo that the Academy had been using since 2004 was not very flexible for online uses. It did not scale down well to small sizes when you put it in the avatar of a social media profile or something like that. It also had not kept up with a lot of the design trends of the time, which I think had moved to a much simpler style than perhaps right at the turn of the century there was a lot of focus on 3D and shadows and so on and so forth. From a philosophical point, it coincided with a real discussion of who we are as an academy at a time when the industry is changing so incredibly. You know, a lot of folks will ask the question, you know, is there still a need for a National Academy of Television?
It's really nice. I like it. Yeah.
Is there a need for an Academy of Television when a lot of people are moving away from television? They're moving to cable, they're moving to streaming, they're moving to online. And I think what we realized is that the name shouldn't be taken too literally. If we were platform-based, you look at all the academies. When we were started, there was a Television Academy, there was a Motion Picture Academy, they do the Oscars, the Recording Academy that does the Grammys, their logo is still a phonograph player. If we were all just honoring things on the basis of the platform that we were honoring, the way we were envisioned when we first were created, we would have all merged into the Academy of iPhone Arts and Sciences many years ago.
Right.
But the reality is, if I stop someone on the subway, you know, when we can start riding the subway again, if I stop someone on the subway and they have their earbuds in and they're looking down at their phone and I ask them, are you watching a movie, a TV show, or listening to music? They could tell me in a heartbeat.
Right.
If I'm watching Netflix, even though I'm watching all three types of things through the same device, I know the difference. There is a feeling there. And so the same way as the Academy didn't disappear when we went from black and white to color, color to HD, HD to online, there is a continuity there. But it's one that has to keep up with the times. And so I think the new logo represents these themes of excellence, community, and transformation that have driven us for our entire now 70-year history, while also addressing some of those practical concerns.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked it. I mean, when I looked at it quickly, it gave me like an angelic feeling. I guess the blue, and I don't know. I liked it a lot. But are you involved?
Yeah, well, for the Daytime Emmys in particular. So, you know, we had redone the logo for the Academy. And then for the Daytime Emmys in particular with the blue and so on, we looked at the logos of the last many, many years. And the typical design was shiny gold like the statue, deep colors, inky black that really evoked nighttime gala. And sure, the ceremony might be held at night.
Right, but
it's
for daytime.
We are the daytime Emmys. There is a vibe there that is different than the Oscars or the primetime Emmys, where you really think of the program being watched or being honored as happening in a darkened theater or during the dark of night. And so we wanted to, with the look and feel of the daytime Emmys, really represent daytime. And so that's where you have still Emmy in gold, but it's a little less of the shiny gold of the statue and a little bit more like an orange sun glow. And then the sky blue of the daytime words. So there we have still that legacy of the gold, but that notion of the sun against a sky blue to really have that anchor to daytime.
Yeah, definitely. Before I forget this question, I wanted to ask you something else, but I don't want to forget this question. Are you involved in the primetime Emmys at all, or are you just strictly daytime?
So we have a sister academy on the West Coast that produces the primetime Emmys, and another sister academy that produces the international Emmys. And then our academy produces all the rest, daytime sports, news and doc, technology and engineering, and then 19 local and regional Emmy Awards around the country. In fact, there were three Emmy Awards in different parts of the country just last night. And so these three academies, there's a lot of programming to honor. And so three academies work closely together and share, of course, that Emmy mark, but are independent organizations. They, of course, have had a lot of announcements of their own, moving several of their events to a virtual space, naming a host for their ceremony in September, Jimmy Kimmel, but still, I would not expect the same ceremony that we've seen the last many years, because they also face the challenges of COVID-19, but having three more months to deal with it than perhaps we did, a little bit more runway to see how does the reopening go and so on. I think every single week that goes by, that menu of options to consider when producing any event, whether it's a wedding, a dinner party, or an Emmy Awards, changes.
Yeah.
So they have the gift of time, as we do with some of our fall events.
Right. I wanted to ask you, what is different with the embracing the diversity and gender and community policies this year? Is there something different, something transpire that is different from prior years?
change some of our rules, particularly around gender identity and orientation in our rules. You know, it used to be, I think, societally broken down in very simple terms, male or female. And
right.
Every form you filled out had those two boxes, and every award show split the same way. Best actor, best actress,
right.
And these very gendered terms for these very
right.
high-profile categories.
Right.
And obviously, as society has sort of caught up over the last many years to the many more shades of nuance to self-identity, in many cases, the award shows haven't. And there were generally two different ways of dealing with it. And we convened a series of conversations with several outside groups, including GLAAD, which is a prominent organization representing LGBTQ plus performers in the entertainment community, and said, you know, how should we be addressing this? How do we want to talk about this? Because we do want to represent the community. We want to represent the entire community and recognize their achievements. And, you know, the answer was, well, there's basically two ways people have gone. One way is to eliminate gender categories and just go to gender neutral categories. And that would be no more best actor, best actress, just best performer.
Right.
And that is probably the easiest and the cleanest. It lets everyone be in the same bucket. No one needs to sort of identify, but you're cutting the number of people being honored.
Right. What happens to the best male, act, you know, what happens to the best female and best male then? Leading role, leading actress, leading man, you know?
And you may even be introducing other biases in there that you didn't even realize. So when the Grammys,
right.
for example, took some of their categories and switched from gendered to non-gendered a few years ago, one of the things they discovered was that now the nominees wound up being almost entirely male.
Mm.
That other parts of the process meant that the men were rising to the top there, and the former head of the Recording Academy was roundly criticized for some of his comments when criticized for that. So the genderless category approach has its benefits, but it's not perfect. The other approach is to keep them, but have it more based on how you self-identify. So to tell someone, you know, it is not for us to tell you whether you are an actor or an actress, a male or a female, man or a woman, whichever you most identify with, that's the category in which you enter.
That's
again,
a good idea.
Another approach, not perfect. There are some who are non-binary, don't recognize as either. And in our conversations, it became clear that it is very easy to get paralyzed by this notion of not knowing which one is better. Neither one is perfect. So you don't want to make the right choice. And it really was
right,
this moment of technique
can you even do best actor, best actress, and then overall best performer? I mean, what makes sense here? You know what I mean? Because
exactly.
If they do recognize as a female, they could do best actress and also take top performer. I don't know. It's very confusing.
Yeah, so, no, and then that's an excellent thought. And so where we landed as a starting point was to say, you know what, we are not going to be paralyzed because we cannot decide which thing is best. Instead,
exactly.
We're just going to try all of them and see how it turns out. And so in some of our categories this year, we went the genderless approach where we now have guest performer and young performer in daytime dramas, as opposed to having the actor and actress categories. And then we kept for this year the lead actor and supporting actor and lead actress, supporting actress categories, but language that allowed anyone to enter those based on how they self-identify. So that rather than choosing either or, we're doing some in some categories, some in other categories, and seeing how it turns out and working with our partners at GLAAD and elsewhere to get their feedback. And I hope every year continually improve it. Now, that
right.
said, this first year of implementing this, we have the first two trans performers ever nominated, both nominated this year. One of them in one of these non-gendered categories, one of them in a gendered category, but in the category that they identify with, not the one that they would have been, shall we say, born into. We also have the first Academy nomination for a drag performer in a performance role. And so, you know, the fact that both approaches generated a nomination, each of which would not necessarily have had a natural home in the competition a year ago, makes us
right,
feel very
right.
happy that we're at least headed in the right direction, even
right.
if we haven't gotten it 100% perfect yet.
Right, working it out. And you know what? It's apropos for Pride, trying to do the right thing and make everybody happy, and
mm-hmm.
that's fabulous. That's fabulous. So,
and the original
dates
of our ceremonies mm-hmm. last weekend, June 12th to 14th, the ceremonies were supposed to be in L.A.,
mm-hmm.
the weekend of L.A. Pride, and so on. So that was going to be a very big part of our celebration that we could not move forward with in light of COVID-19. But I think that in these nominations, we gave a lot of the tribute that we didn't get to do in person.
I wanted to ask you, part of my ignorance on this, but how are the winners picked? Is it their peers are doing this, or is it the folks at home picking their favorites, or is it a mix of the two? Since we're home watching TV now, I would think that, you know, the people watching from home would have a big input and role in playing the winners, picking the winner this year. No, or no, it's strictly the peers or people in the industry picking the winners.
So they're entirely peer judged. First and foremost, you have to enter the competition. And there are times when there are people that you would expect to see honored and then get surprised when they're not even nominated. And part of that is because there are many stars who choose not to enter, and therefore they're not even on the ballot. I recall after Oprah Winfrey, for example, won for many years in a row for talk show host, she actually stopped entering because she wanted to give more of an opportunity to other hosts of other talk shows who were coming up to step into that spotlight. But people
well, there
enter,
is something,
and then
that's something I didn't know. I thought that they were chosen from the show they were on. So you're telling me I'm in a show, I'm not going to get nominated if I don't fill out a form and saying I want to be nominated.
Exactly. And
wow.
In each category, people enter and they submit what they feel their best work of the season was.
I had no idea.
In some categories, that means submitting an entire episode. You know, if you are a director, you'll submit your best episode or two from the season. If you are a craft person, like a hair or makeup artist, you might submit a reel of examples over the course of a season. And then a panel of judges is assembled who work in the same area. So if you are an actor, the judges are all other actors. If you are a makeup artist, all the judges work in makeup. Sometimes in other fields of television, because we do have a rule that you don't want those conflicts of interest there. So it may be an actor who works in primetime television, for example, who's judging there. And they judge, and the ballots are kept secret and tabulated by a third-party accounting firm until, in a normal year, those envelopes are opened on stage and we find out at the same time as the at-home audience finds out who won.
Now, are you a judge as well, Adam, or no, you're just behind the scenes?
I am not one anymore. The staff now, as administrators of the competition, are not judges. That would be a conflict of interest. But prior to my becoming CEO, I was a judge in several of the national competitions as well as several of the regional Emmy Awards over the years.
Wow. I wanted to ask you, because have you ever gotten a nomination from someone who nominated themselves and you looked at it and said, are you kidding me? have you ever had that happen to you?
You know, when you've judged enough or screened enough.
You know, because everybody's full of, you know, Adam, everybody's full of themselves and they think they're better than people may think, you know. So, you know, that'd be like
I'll tell you this also, Joanne. While, yes, I have judged and I've had that reaction, I can also tell you that early in my career, I was the one who entered that entry that people probably looked at and said,
what did you enter
what's
for?
This guy I think he's doing. You know, I even remember.
What did you enter
for,
Adam? What was your category you entered for?
I think my very first entry was actually in the Boston Regional Emmys when I was in high school, and we were very proud of our high school television station. And we had just gotten our high school TV show on the local public access. So we had just barely met the requirements of the Academy at the time to get into the competition. And we entered and, of course, did not get nominated or win. But that was my
Don't
first
tell me,
direct
was it Zoom? Was it Zoom? The show that you were on, the show, was it Zoom out of Boston? Because I think we're the same age, that's why I'm asking.
No,
what show was it?
No, it was our little just self-produced high school newscast.
Okay.
But it's funny
you should mention
Zoom because
you
a lot of
Zoom.
Colleagues and I. Oh, yeah. We now that we spend all our days on Zoom video conferencing, I and several colleagues have been known to hum the theme song to each other and pull up old clips from the original Zoom.
I know.
It brings back those memories.
That was a great show, actually. It was crap, but it was good. It kept us entertained, you know. But, no, that's great. That's great. So I wanted to ask you, one more thing about the Emmys. We'll come back to it, but I did want to touch base on Twitter, if you're okay with that. Oh, geez, I took my train of thought with the talking about the Zoom days. Yeah, but based on our conversation, I can tell we're the same age, so that's why I had to ask you if it was Zoom that you worked on. Oh, God, what was I just going to ask you about the okay. I'm going to go to my Twitter until this comes back to me. All right. So
great.
how did you wind up becoming the head of Twitter? That's crazy. And was this when Twitter just started?
Well, I wasn't the head of Twitter. I was head of news and politics at Twitter. I was there from 2010 to 2016. And it was one of those things. I mean, my career had always been trying to find this balance between several areas of passion, news, particularly television news, technology, and politics. And so had started my career at NBC, had gone to Capitol Hill to do the political thing, was part of the executive team at C-SPAN, overseeing their digital efforts. And I thought, okay, this has to be the best equilibrium of these three areas. I'm doing TV news coverage of politics, overseeing their digital platforms. And then, you know, Twitter came along. I was in Washington, D.C. at the time, and they were looking for someone to lead news and politics. And it just seemed like, oh, wow, no, that's the perfect balance. And so I was their first hire in Washington, worked out of my apartment for the first year and a half. And the role in the early years was really focused on getting candidates and elected officials and journalists to even sign up and use the platform. It was a lot of days literally walking the halls of Congress, knocking on doors and saying, "Congressman, have you seen this app?" And then certainly as things evolved, working closely with the campaigns through 2016 on how they use Twitter to communicate with the American people. And I left shortly after the 2016 election, took some time off, and then the Academy came along.
Cool. Now, I got to ask you something. We are not a political show, folks. We never will be. But I have to ask you, since you did work at Twitter, what did you think of the new ruling of them putting the warning signs when the president posts something that they believe may not be true or something harming? What do you think of that move?
Well, I think it's important not to look at it in a vacuum. Certainly the company has wrestled for many years over what to do with tweets from the president that had they come from a normal individual. And when I say normal, I mean someone who's not
you and me.
The president
yes,
of the United
the
States.
Things that have been, the things have been posted,
be
if I posted them, I'd be kicked off. I mean, what is this, you know?
Yeah, and so an early example, early in his presidency, he had tweeted some threats against North Korea, and particularly its
right.
leader, Kim Jong-un, and said, you know, "We're going to wipe your country off the face of the planet."
Mm.
And if I had tweeted that, if I said, "Joanne, I'm going to, you know, shape up or we're going to blow up your house,"
right.
that would have been a violation of the rules and I would be kicked off. The difference is, though, that he is a world leader, and when he says those things, it is a statement of U.S. foreign policy. And so I think the company was right not to delete those tweets. Fast forwarding to the more recent events, they had rolled out this fact-checking feature, this ability to mark a tweet as being potentially misleading or inaccurate, a few weeks earlier. So up to that point, their choice had always been, do we delete it or not? And I think because he was the president, they were very hesitant to delete these tweets. But now a new option came up where they didn't have to delete them. If they thought something was questionable, they at least could mark it.
I think a lot of people missed, though.
Yeah, what a lot of people missed, though, was that putting the fact check on his tweets about mail-in voting was not the first time they had used this feature. They had used it once before when a couple of weeks earlier, when a video went viral that appeared to show Vice President Mike Pence at an event where he was delivering supplies to a clinic treating COVID patients.
Right. And it was for Jimmy Kimmel, right?
Yes, and it was for Jimmy Kimmel. And once it became viral, people didn't realize it was originally a Jimmy Kimmel joke. And so it gave the misimpression that he was carrying empty boxes just for the cameras.
Right.
That was actually the first piece of content that Twitter marked with this fact check language. So I found it funny that the company came under so much fire the second time they used it when it appeared to be critical of the president. When in fact the first time they used it was actually standing up for the vice president.
Right. I'm glad they put
it
into place.
Really struck
I'm definitely glad. I'm glad they put it into place. Are you there, Andy? Adam, are you there?
No worries.
I'm looking at this phone number that I have to call after I talk to you. I'm sorry. I have to talk to Andy Rogers when I'm done. But no, I'm happy they did it. I think they should have did it a long time ago. But again, we're not political here. But again, if it was you or me saying anything like that, we would have been knocked off a long time ago. But so how'd you go from Twitter to the Emmys? I mean, what a drastic turn there.
It was one of those things that, depending on the lens you look through, was either drastic or long in the making. So I had been associated with the Academy for 20 some odd years, largely because in addition to the Emmy Awards, we also give scholarships. And I was one of the earliest scholarship winners of the organization. And so once I started making my own way in the industry after school and so on, I was invited to come join the scholarship committee to help select the next generation of scholarship recipients. Eventually became the scholarship committee chair and the vice president of our foundation, which oversees the scholarships. And that was always, my volunteer work on the side while going through the rest of my career. And so I had left Twitter after the 2016 election. I had taken some time off, and the Academy was looking for a new CEO. And the then chairman came to me and said, "Adam, you've taken some time off now. You're looking for the next thing. You've been coming to our board meetings for the last 5 years as a representative of the foundation side and of the scholarships. Would you want to come aboard?" And I said no.
You said no? I would have jumped.
I initially said no, and I was wrong. And I'm very fortunate that he wore me down, because I think that at the time, I had been, I think a little bit jaded in that I was coming from Twitter, so this very modern, tech-forward, fast-moving organization. And I think I feared that maybe the Academy was different. And what I discovered very quickly once I got into the role was the way in which the Academy is more transformative than I think I'd given it, or that a lot of people have given it credit for. And that drove a lot of things we've talked about here tonight, changing some of the categories, revisiting the branding and the logos and so on, so that the rest of the world can see how transformative the Academy really is and how readily we are adapting to changes in the industry and in the world.
Right. That's it. I would have definitely jumped on. I would have chose the Emmys over Twitter any day. That's more fun, at least, So what's Sharp Things? You started that in 2017. What is that?
Oh, so Sharp Things was a consulting firm that I set up after leaving Twitter to pursue a handful of side projects. Initially, the Academy was one of them. I came in originally as a consultant, and then that became interim CEO and full-time CEO. These days, my focus is pretty squarely on the Academy's business, but who knows? The next chapter, when it comes, maybe another Sharp Thing.
Wow. Cool. Well, Adam, it was a pleasure speaking with you. I thank you so much for the extra time as well. I wish you nothing but the best, with hoping everything goes smoothly on the 26th. And folks, check out the Daytime Emmy Awards, June 26th at 8 p.m. Eastern. And it's going to be fabulous.
And if you miss it and you don't have a DVR, it'll be available at CBS All Access.
Excellent, excellent. Is there anything else you would like to add to the folks out there in regard to the Emmys or what they might be expecting, or any information they could find out more information about what's going on? Because you said it's more than one day, correct?
Yeah, you can get all the information at theemmys.tv or by following us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, it's at the Emmys, facebook.com/the Emmys. So you can find us in each of these different places. Daytime Emmys for broadcast dramas, game shows, talk shows will be Friday, June 26th on CBS, 8 o'clock, or watch it later on CBS All Access. Digital dramas, Sunday, July 19th. Children's programming, Sunday, July 26th. Both of those will be at theemmys.tv.
Cool. Oh, well, let me ask you this. It has nothing to do with anything, but since you're affiliated with CBS, do you know if Big Brother's coming back on soon? We're waiting. We're waiting.
I don't. But it was funny. I remember early in the pandemic hearing that one of the challenges, because obviously there's Big Brother here, but then there's versions
of
Big Brother in other countries.
Oh. Yeah. Yes, yes.
And in several of the other countries where they have Big Brother shows, they were already in production with the people locked in the house. And there's a big discussion of when to tell the house members what was happening in the rest of the world. And to tell the people inside the house, you know, there's a pandemic out there.
Right, right.
And so on. So a lot of things you don't think about, but.
I
will say to everyone out there, happy Father's Day. And Joanne, thank you so much for having me on the show.
Oh, Adam, it was a pleasure meeting you. Thank you. I love talking to you. And again, all the best. I'm definitely going to tune in and check it out to see how you guys are going to pull this off. I'm sure you're going to do it smoothly, and it's going to be great. And I can't wait to watch it. And thank you so much again. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Adam Sharp, president of the National Academy of tell them, Adam, it's a lot.
National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences.
Exactly. Thank you. You took the words right out of my mouth. Thank you so much, Adam. You take care.
Thank you, Joanne.
And happy Father's Day. And thank you so much for joining us. Take care.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye. Okay, bye-bye. Oh, boy. That is a mouthful for me. I'm sorry. You guys know I'm always discombobulated and have paperwork all over the place, so I apologize. It is the National – I'm going off the top of my head. National Academy of Television and Arts. Right, right, right? And Sciences, NATAS. I'm sorry. And Adam Sharp, he's behind the scenes of everything going on that you're going to see on June 26th, Friday, and the two-hour CBS special. 8 p.m. Eastern, and it's the first time the Emmys are coming back to TV in, I believe, it was 7 years, and it's going to be done with everybody at home, so it's going to be quite interesting, to say the least. So I just wanted to say thank you to our listeners. Happy Father's Day to all you folks, and again, thank you, Adam, and to our sponsors, the High Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey. Get over there. The food is delicious, and the drinks, I'm not a big drinker, I don't drink, but they make some really nice drinks, and they look so pretty, too. The High Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey, Precious Memory Video in Kintnersville, Pennsylvania, KWV Wines in South Africa, Tees for the Times in Clifton, New Jersey, Syntech Productions in Lenoka Harbor, which is... It's a music studio for independent artists, and they if you've got music, you need. If you're like me, I can write the lyrics and the melody, but I can only play a little bit of music. So if you're like me, and you can do that, go see these guys. They are fantastic. I've actually worked with them in the past, and. I'll continue to work with them. So that's syntechproductions.com in Lenoka Harbor for anybody who needs help with any studio needs. Then we've got the Oleander Public Relations in Texas. If you are just starting out in the industry, or if you have been doing it forever, these are the guys you want to work with. They're fantastic. And they do website building. I mean, there's so much that they do, and wonderful people as well. And also Take a Break from cancer.org for Pete's sake. And I really got to talk to you guys about these guys. they are sort of like a Make-A-Wish Foundation for folks who are having a tough time just going through struggling with cancer. And what they do is they offer families, you know, because I've said this from day one, when someone in your family gets cancer, they don't have it. Everybody has it because you're all going through it at the same time. And you may not be going through that physical pain, but you're going through everything they're going through. And, you know, and it's hard on the family as well as the person who has cancer. So what they do is they will send you away, you and your family, not to think about a damn thing, not a care in the world. Just focus on you and your family and just wonderful people. And unfortunately, with everybody else, they've been hit really, really hard with the pandemic because their fundraising situation has changed because they can't do any fundraisers because they usually do gatherings and galas and they can't do that anymore. So if there's any way you can contribute or help out, I mean, you don't have to do anything financial. There's other ways you can help people. Money doesn't, it doesn't take money to make people happy. It helps a little bit, but, you know, yeah, there are other things you can do to help people. It doesn't always revolve around money. And if there's anything, if you want to check it out, it's takeabreakfromcancer.org. Great organization. I cannot tell you what they did for my family. Just beautiful. I mean, everything. And I'm speechless over what they did. I mean, it was just amazing. And I think it's a beautiful thing that they do this for people. And they really need to continue to do that because it really helps people out. So, all righty. Well, Johnny boy, I hope you had a happy Father's Day. We'll be back on Wednesday with, what's today, the 21st? Ah, Mr. Bruce Valanche. He's actually from Paterson, New Jersey. He's close to my stomping ground. He's originally from there. And Bruce is a comedy writer. You probably know him best from seeing him on Hollywood Squares. And then we have Maggie Jones. She's come up with a product that has helped the people on the front lines to make their lives easier for them. And then on the 28th, we have movie director John Hancock, and backed by popular demand, Michael Cole from the Mod Squad. And that's going to be a lot of fun, too. So, well, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. Again, happy Father's Day. Happy everything, okay? Let's try that. Let's do it. Happy everything. All right, guys, take care. It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Andy Sharp. Take care. Bye-bye.